Welcome to the Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013 board meeting. I'm reporting out from the closed session. We had two personal items which were discussed, but no action was taken. And so we're going to move to item, give me a minute here. This is the announcement of closed session items. Okay. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Seeing that everybody is in agreement, we will move on. There is no action on any closed session items. Now we'll move to the approval of minutes.
I move approval of the minutes of 8/20/2013.
And I'll second that with the notation that they are as amended.
Okay. That was a motion by Mr. Unger and approved by Ms. Roger, Mrs. Roger.
I'm sorry.
There was an amendment?
The amendment was for the previous set of minutes. You recall that Mr. Millar tried to make a correction last time, and we couldn't find it, and I located it. So the minutes that you're approving tonight are unchanged.
As is, not amended.
Okay.
So we have that acceptable by the maker of the motion and the second. And the minutes are acceptable to all. Okay, we'll move on. Okay,
sir.
Mr. Buckman.
I was not at the meeting, so I need to abstain.
Oh, okay. It's 5-1 with one abstention. Mr. Buckman abstained because he wasn't present. Okay, now it's my pleasure to introduce the student representatives to the board. We'll start with, is it Baden Cortez from Pacific Beach?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then go ahead with your announcements.
I was chosen by Mr. A. I've been at Pacific Beach for almost 3 years now. Participated in 2 years of the mock trial, and was actually here the year before last for Project Citizen. And let me begin. Pacific Beach has started off the new year with a variety of staffing changes. First off, Mr. Marinello has joined our team as a new principal coming from Laguna Middle School. Pacific Beach also has a new math teacher, Mrs. Wilder, who comes to us from San Luis Obispo Community School and has been showing impressive progress in adjusting to Pacific Beach's model. Lastly, Mr. Aranguena has taken on the role as the new lead teacher. Pacific Beach High School is coming off a great last marking period where over 82% of the student body reached their credit standard. Students earned an average of 10.8 credits, up nearly 20% from the previous year and 24% from the previous marking period. After one of the largest graduating classes in Pacific Beach history, we are working hard to recruit new students, starting off the year with nearly 20 new students and more coming by the day. Laura Ortiz, Ms. Jacobson said that after we complete the picture, we'll bring it down to show you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, Baden. Scott, since you were next to come, can report to us about San Luis High.
Yes, of course, thank you. So ASB kicked it off last week with a bang, especially on Friday. It was a long day. So it began Friday morning. We threw a staff appreciation breakfast for all the staff members. Free breakfast, really good reception, a lot of emails from the staff, so that was nice. Then you go to our nutrition break, and our two spirit commissioners, we got them a shopping cart decked out in tiger apparel, and one of them got inside the shopping cart with a football helmet and a bunch of candy, and we played a bunch of music, and they would go around at the quad pushing the shopping cart, throwing candy at anybody wearing black and gold. So just trying to get the spirit boost going. Take that to lunch, and we had a new student luncheon. All the new students were invited for free pizza. We ordered like $170 worth of pizza to feed all these kids. It was really cool. All the foreign exchange students were there, so we got to meet them, and all of ASB was there, so we were kind of welcoming them, and that had a really good reception as well. And then that night, we threw our first ever kids movie night down between the new gym and the old gym on the practice field with our projector, our screen, and our huge sound system. And so what we did, we sent out 3,000 invitations to all elementary school kids, and we ended up getting about like 60 to 80 people, which was fantastic for our first time. And we played the Jungle Book, and it went off without a hitch. So it's free admission. We sold concessions, but I mean, like 50 cents for a bag of popcorn. It was more about just kind of getting involved with the community. And we really enjoyed doing that, so we're definitely going to try to do it again, and might even do a high school one where high school students are actually invited. And other than that, we have our September 11th back-to-school night from 6:30 to 8:30. And Mr. Black, our new dean this year, is starting up a tutor program where he takes like seniors and juniors who are high-level students, and they come after school maybe once, twice a week to teach, to tutor other students who might not be performing as well. And he comes from Morro Bay High School, and they said that at Morro Bay it had great success. So he's going to try to install it here. So that's really exciting. And one last note, our football team won our first game against Garces up in Bakersfield last Friday, which was a good win because last year they beat us by 1 point after we were up 20-0. So it was some good redemption. Other than that, the school year's really nice. I love my ASB class, bunch of new kids, a lot of new faces, but it's going really well. So thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I don't know which representative we have today from Morro Bay High. Is this Lila or Brooklyn? Okay. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and you can use Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' phone.
Yeah?
Microphone.
Okay. Hi, I am Brooklyn Ramos. I am the ASB secretary at Morro Bay High School. And the first thing I'd have to say about our class that has shocked me the most is how large it is. In my 4 years of being in the class, I've never, like, we hardly have enough desks to seat everybody. We have 43 kids in our class, and I'm really excited about it. Just how much we're going to get done and all the new ideas to bring to the table. Last week, we had our back-to-school night. The ASB kids wore our blue C-shirts. I don't know if any of you have been to the campus and have seen them. They're kind of blue and obnoxious, but it gets the message across. We directed Lost Parents at back-to-school night, and from what I've heard, it was very successful. We have our homecoming underway, planned for September 30th through October 4th, with our dance on Saturday, October 5th. I don't want to say the theme yet, just because I would like our school to know before you guys. we have our Club Rush coming up on Wednesday, September 11th, and Club Rush is gives kids the opportunity to keep old clubs that are already on campus going, and also to instill new clubs and for the rest of the campus to see if they're interested in getting involved in all of our clubs that we have so far. And lastly, our new school motto this year is called Words Matter, and it's all about instilling in the students, basically showing us how we can use our words with power and how we can use our words to hurt people, which is clearly bad. And our principal, Mr. Andrus, has instilled a poster contest, which would sort of, it gives students the chance to design a logo, and the winner, which I think he picks, gets an Amazon gift card for, I think, maybe $50 to $100. So I'm really excited to see that because we have some amazing artists on our campus.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ramos. Yes, we have a comment.
What time is the homecoming game? Is it 6:30 or 7?
The
I think it's. Could check maybe the next
I
time.
I want to say. Like
yeah, Chris.
And then I think the board received an email from, although not officially correspondence, the board received an email from Andrew Carter today regarding transportation in San Luis.
Thank you, Mr. Unger. Okay, so we're going to proceed from that point to public comment. At this point in the agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. The board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda due to the Brown Act. And the total time comment is limited to 20 minutes at this time and 20 minutes for each agenda topic. So each speaker is limited to 3 minutes. So is there anybody who wishes to make any public comment at this time? Okay. We have nothing. Okay. So we'll move on to item 7.1, the state budget update.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm actually going to defer this a little bit. Julie Lang is going to come up and talk a little bit in a minute about unaudited actuals. And so at that time, I'm going to give the board kind of an update on our expenditures and revenues at this point as of the end of August. So if I can, that budget aspect I'm going to bring back at that point. But I do want to touch base with the board just a little bit about transportation. So it's been quite the hot topic, as you well know, over the past week and a half. Jeff Guy, Annie Sharp, myself have been fielding questions, talking with principals, working with parents, and doing whatever we can to kind of ease some of the strain that's occurred. Basically, kind of in a summary form a little bit, we cut 8 bus drivers last year. And due to those personnel cuts, Annie, with the best of her ability, along with Jeff, kind of incorporated this into almost a hub bus system, where you would have hubs, certain places, kids would go, walk to those areas, would get dropped off, would be taken around places. And so that in itself is a difficult transition to try to accomplish. And a big part of that, I will say, and I'm probably going to have to come back to the board as a topic item probably in October, and that is whether or not we can continue to have intra-district busing, which is busing that, you know, throughout a student maybe lives at the Country Club Los Ranchos area and they want to go to Del Mar. So that's something that we currently do and have done in the past. But with our current cuts in the system that we have established, it's really that type of service is probably not feasible. Now, that said, we would definitely have to look at places like Pacheco and Teach, where we may have different, you know, aspects in terms of the school itself and how it's made up. So that's something for a later date. But what happens is in order to do the local route and then get students across town, you basically have to get those kids to school either way too early or vice versa, way too late. And so based on the system, we have a range of issues, which is everywhere from students, you know, elementary students getting to school 45 minutes before the bell rings. And when principals are telling parents and kids, hey, you can't be there until 15 minutes before the bell rings, that's a problem. Okay, supervision, all along those lines. And then on the opposite spectrum, we have students that are at school too long in the afternoon prior to getting picked up to go home. So that said, Annie and Jeff have been working tirelessly to try to work this out. I mean, day and night with bus drivers, with routes, trying to make things happen. And realistically, they can't do it with the staff that they have. They cannot solve all of those issues. So I met with them today. We actually did rider tallies with all the buses last week. You know, how many students got on at each stop? Where were they getting off? Because part of it is before we add staff or we do things, we want to make sure that we're being efficient, that we're doing the best job possible with the resources we have. And so even with those rally sheets and looking at it today with Jeff and with Annie, there really is no possible way of alleviating some of those major concerns, which is students getting there too early and students having to wait after school too long, without probably adding at least a bus driver on this in the city and a bus driver on the coast. And so I just wanted to let you know that we're going through that. I have a last call out to principals. Hey, give me a list of every single one of your issues because we want to make sure that we solve those if indeed we're going to add bus drivers and try to change this route. And I feel like we have to. So we probably took on a little bit too much in those initial cuts without, you know, it's working, but it's kind of at what cost and the effect on kids. Right, and so I think that's the biggest thing now is to really, I think we need to alleviate some of those student issues. So just as an update to the board that we're probably going to have to look at adding a route both on the coast as well as in the city.
Mr. Pinkerton, I just have a quick question. Have you had any feedback on the issuing of...
and their drop-off areas and just have a better process for that and have that established? So these are all things that Jeff, Annie, myself are... on a constant basis of things that we can do to improve that communication. But I did want to bring to the board's attention, because I think it's critical that if the board should decide to change any policy like that, that we give parents proper notice. So if that was something we could talk about next month in October, that could possibly be for the 14-15 school year. You know, because, again, if you're going to make a change like that, look at not doing the intra-district busing or those types of things, then – because even adding the two drivers, it's still not going to be perfect because of the requirements and the needs that go along with having that type of service delivery model.
Mrs. Sheffer and then Mrs. Roger.
I'd like to thank you for your efforts in this regard. I know this turned out to be kind of an unanticipated glitch, and I appreciate the patience of the families out there and the efforts that you and your team are making. I know it's been difficult. In terms of the intra-district situation, you're mentioning that it may be discussed at a future board meeting, and I would assume that we will be receiving data with regard to how
Absolutely.
Many students, where they're going, where they're from, the impact this has, and all of that information before, prior to any discussion.
Sure.
Thank you.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I'm assuming that our high school students are getting to school, that within San Luis Obispo, the students are managing to navigate the city buses when they need to.
Mm-hmm.
And the bus.
And I won't say it's perfect by any means, right? But there are options available. Mr. O'Connor has set up a system where his library is open from 7 till 5 every day. So if students need to get dropped off, if they need to take an earlier bus, those types of things. So there's places for them on campus. So it is working. We
and
did have an issue because we did issue the one bus to Los Osos Morro Bay High School.
Yes.
Because of the issues that were going on with Los Osos and the complexity of the transportation there with RTA. But even that, what we found is that by issuing that bus and doing the double time, we've actually had more ridership. So we've had more kids taking the bus than in the past. And even with our elementary and middle school route, we're seeing more ridership. We have a couple of full buses right now in the city, which is another reason why we need to add a driver. But so there's a lot that's going. Now, that said, it's working, right? It is working. So it just there's just some things that we need to definitely make better for kids.
I guess my question would be, if we have elementary students, if we have a second grader whose parent puts their child on the bus, mm-hmm. and they arrive at school 45 minutes early, that's really not tenable.
That would be correct.
So,
as far as I'm concerned, yes.
Okay, so
it's putting a lot of undue issues on principals and secretaries and other staff.
And the students and the families,
and
you know,
and
everybody yeah. involved. So are you saying then, Mr. Pinkerton, that you might bring this back to us in 2 weeks for an authorization for two additional bus drivers? Or how quickly are we thinking about acting on this so that that situation doesn't persist?
So it's a good question. So in the past, and I, you know, in terms of policy-wise, procedure-wise, we have added back staff when needed for classrooms, for things like that. So in this case, more of an update that's something that we will go forward with. So, but if you, I mean, we can wait for authorization, or it's normally a process to just add if we
okay.
need to.
We know the cost of a bus driver in a route. I would assume it's the same as the Los Osos Morro Bay, give or take.
Yeah.
So then is there, I guess, board consensus that the administration should just take action ASAP to alleviate it? Okay.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, and I know we're going to be talking about this when we get to the unaudited actuals, but I look forward to the discussion and the process on what we do now that we seem to have weathered the worst of the storm, and what are we going to bring back? What don't we bring back? What's, you know, we had a process for the budget cuts, and now...
And that is going to be a topic of discussion today.
Exactly.
When I
really
budget.
Look forward to that, because I think that's huge. And I guess I absolutely agree that we need to take care of transportation for kids, but My worry is that these things will kind of come out in dribs and drabs, and all of a sudden we spent $3 million.
Yes.
So I think that discussion is going to be real, real important. Thank you.
Thank Dr. you. Prater?
We're really trying to be as efficient and cost-effective as we can be, as committed to in our last year's budget adoption process. However, I think we did cut a little too close. In this case, I would certainly seek your consensus that if the data comes in over the next few days, that we can address that concern with the addition of a driver or two. If it goes beyond that, I would like to come back and have a deeper discussion with the board. But within a driver or two, in order to get kids to school on time and pick them up on time, is to me the basics of doing school. And I would hope that you would give me that authorization.
Thank you, Mr. Pinkren. And Mr. Dr. Prater, I believe you're up next with the superintendent's updates.
Well, I'll take this one because it's very, very brief. Obviously, school started. And I'm done. No, other than transportation, we've had a very, very smooth opening. On the agenda item, it says just to report on enrollment in preschool, so I can do that. Our enrollment is at 7,346 students as of today, and that includes our transitional kindergarten program. So that's 66 students more than when we finished the school year last year, which is a pretty modest increase, more or less where we expected to be. That growth in the school district is kind of across the board. It's not kindergarten growth. So it looks as if, at least in the near future, we're kind of stabilized in that 7,300 plus range. But a very smooth opening, and class sizes are what we targeted them to be. I mean, they're obviously we have bigger classes and smaller classes, but at the K-3 level, we're a little above 24-1, 28-1 at the 4th through 12th grade level. So it's where we staffed it. We haven't had to make adjustments in staffing since the start of the school year, which is always a nice thing to do. In terms of preschool, today was the first day of our preschool. So school started for us on the 22nd, but preschool started today. And so we have our four Success for All preschools almost at capacity. I think we have one or two slots in a couple of our schools, which will be filled. And obviously, we opened our fourth preschool this year at Baywood Elementary. And licensing for that school took place last week in the nick of time, and all went very smoothly. So all in all, a good start for us. I can entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Robinette. Mrs. Roger.
I don't intend to monopolize the meeting, guys, but I was at Baywood today for the opening of the preschool, and it was really spectacular. I mean, the children, it was their very first day. I think there were 18 of them. I could be wrong, but I believe that's what there was. And they were darling. They were attentive to the teacher. There was a teacher and a bilingual aide, which was wonderful because we had several children that needed to avail themselves of the aide. And the classroom looked terrific. Everyone was excited. It was inspiring. I am so glad that we have done that. I just see 18 children who wouldn't have otherwise had the opportunity to attend preschool there and fully engaged and ready to begin learning. So it was wonderful to be there.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. We are going to move on to the delegation of authority to invest monies. It's item 8.01. And to invest monies in local agency investment fund. And Julie Lang will explain that all to us.
Yes, I will. Can you hear me? Is this on? Okay. As you know, whenever we have a change in administration, a board resolution is required in order to add a new signer to the account. So in this case, we are adding Mr. Ryan Pinkerton to our local agency investment fund. Once they receive this resolution, it will supersede any other authorizations that they've had from the past. Do you have any questions about that?
Are there any questions? Is there any public comment? Okay, seeing no public comment and there being no question, we'll bring it back to the board.
I would move to adopt resolution number 02-13-14.
And I'll second that motion.
So the motion is by Mrs. Sheffer. I'm switching to last names is throwing me off.
You take all of the district's unrestricted state aid and you put it into a box, and whatever overflows the box goes into the state's GAN limit. The state has a GAN limit, the district has a GAN limit. So it's almost impossible not to pass the GAN limit. And if you look on page 3 of the actual GAN limit, you can see that we are over $10 million under what our adjusted appropriations limit is. So we're well within our GAN limit. And this is also a roll call vote, unless you have any questions about it.
We're going to go to public comment. Is there any public comment on this resolution? Seeing none, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. This is just going to go back to my old ROP hat. I was interested to see on page 2 that in one of the lines was actually money coming in for ROP, and so often we heard or we hear there's no ROP money coming in. And in talking with Ryan today, actually with email, my understanding is the money comes in for ROP, but we've decided to sweep it into our general fund. Is that the correct way to describe it?
Well, this ROP is the money that we give to the JPA.
Right.
So this is part of our appropriation from the state. They certify at the first period apportionment. At first period apportionment, which happens in about January, we didn't think we were going to get any money in any of these funds. By the second period apportionment, which occurs in June, we ended up getting some money in ROP, this $91,000. So that went to the JPA, and the JPA has now paid us back for what we spent in ROP last year.
Mm-hmm. Can I make
Mr. Buckman?
As long as I've taken this one, can I make a motion to approve this resolution?
You certainly may. So motion is made by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Roger. Is there any other discussion by the board? As seeing none, we'll take the roll call vote.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Eisendreth Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Questenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
So we're moving on to item 8.03, which is the closure of the debt service fund.
That's correct. Let me just take care of everything tonight on one fell swoop. So Fund 56 was opened in 2001 for the purpose of paying the debt service on the Vicente project. The County Office of Education and the County Treasury recommend that if you're not using a fund that you close it. It's sort of like having an open bank account, even though you may not have a balance in it and there's no activity, you should probably make it a formality and close that fund. So that's what this resolution is about. The Vicente project was originally a shared cost between the County Office of Ed, County Mental Health, and San Luis Coastal. The County Office of Ed and San Luis Coastal paid off their portion of the debt quite a while ago, and County Mental Health made its last payment in October of 2011. So we haven't had any activity in this fund for the last year, and I think it might be time to just close off the fund.
Thank you. Is there any public comment on this resolution closing the debt service fund? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Dr. Eisendreth Rogers.
I move acceptance of resolution number 041314.
Motion made by Dr. Eisendreth Rogers and the second by Mr. Unger.
Mrs. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
And Mrs. Sheffer.
And so now we will have the approval of the unaudited year-end financial statement. Is that correct? Item 9.01. And
is there a clicker? Okay, we'll give you the we'll give you the eye. Okay, we have closed out our books on 12-13. We're getting ready to focus on 13-14. There we go. Oh, okay. I have something on the W drive. Will that work? So we are presenting our unaudited actuals for your approval tonight, or if you prefer, we can bring it back on the 17th, although it is due to the county office on the 15th. Be over. Once we moved money in from the Fund 20 to pay for the retiree benefits, our deficit in general fund was $2,705,000, leaving an ending balance of $18,656.785. That's fine. But as you know, a lot of that money is spoken for in our components of the ending balance. So if we start with our ending fund balance and you take out the non-spendable funds, that includes our 10% for economic uncertainties, our revolving cash, and any inventory that we might have. Those are considered non-spendable. Restricted funds are EIA, Medi-Cal billing, and restricted lottery. Those we have to use for specific purposes, so we have to set those aside. We have reduced our flexible resources down to three. We have adult ed, we have art and music block grant, and instructional materials realignment. Any of the other flexible resource balances were swept into the general fund, where they have been being used anyway toward the initiatives. So those will just go to support regular general fund activities. We also have those one-time revenues, which is the Morro Bay Water, the energy grant, and the Sachs conversion. We have those recorded in unaudited actuals. They actually are not set aside specifically in the general fund. They're just part of the ending balance. And with the board approval, we may just sweep those into the general fund and not report on those anymore. And then finally, we have the lottery and other. This includes our carryover, which between MA, Medi-Cal, and all the site and department carryover, it comes to about $800,000. It also includes lottery, which came to about $1.8 million. Our Education Protection Act had an ending balance of about $114,000. That was used to pay for Los Osos middle school teachers, and that balance will carry over to this year, and we'll continue using that for the teachers. We always have to have our catastrophic leave balance set aside, and also deferred maintenance. We won't be getting any deferred maintenance money as a separate funding source anymore, so we're setting money aside to transfer to Fund 14 to continue using that for deferred maintenance. So our unappropriated balance ended up being $3,445,000, which is really close to what it was at second interim. So we were right on target. Next slide, please. And this slide just shows all of the funds' ending balances. You can see that some of them increased and some of them decreased. The general fund had that $2.7 million deficit. Cafeteria fund went up a little bit. The OPEB, the Fund 20, went down because we made that transfer to cover the retiree benefits. Building fund really isn't getting a revenue source anymore. The $70,000 we got last year was for reimbursement for the solar project, but that will not continue. So that fund will probably keep diminishing. One positive note is that our capital facilities fund, which is where we collect our developer fees, was about $200,000 more than it was in the last year. So I think that's probably a good sign for the economy. And that summarizes our unaudited actuals. Does anybody have any questions about that?
Well, we'll open it for public comment. Is there any public comment on the unaudited actuals? Okay. Then we'll come back to the board. Mr. Buckman?
Yeah. Thanks, Julie. That was great. It gets better every year. really easier to understand.
Okay.
As I was going through this, one of the things I noticed was that the mandated rebates, which I think the state probably owes us millions at this point, did come in about $50,000 higher than expected. Down under lottery and other.
Oh, that's actually just carryover for the mandated costs that we give to the sites. Last year, I think we only got about $9,000 of actual revenue in mandated costs,
right,
but we continue giving the sites budget based on what the state owes us.
Well, that's generous of us.
Yes.
I hope the sites appreciate it. I know I do.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
So as part of this process, too, Mr. Quisberry, I think it would be good for me to do my state my budget presentation as well. Because the questions may be the same that you'll have for Julie and myself. And maybe I can do that prior to the approval of the unaudited actuals, if that's okay.
Sounds fine with me.
So as part of the process with unaudited actuals as well as the budget in general, I just think that the two mesh together really well. And so part of my goal for you is that we communicate this often throughout the year, and as Mr. Unger said, that we begin the process now in terms of where we sit, it looks like, in terms of increased property tax revenues. So that's something we did not plan for when necessarily the 1% possibly that we had looked at when we were making budget reductions, those types of things. Okay? So there was a substantial increase more than what we had thought. So federal revenue, which you'll see the red part of the pie, basically is made up of our federal categorical dollars, our Title I, Title III, those types of things. We have our state revenue, which is the $3.3 million, which is basically our state categorical revenues, and that's a lot of that SWEP money. So the ROP funds, those different types of things that necessarily were laid out in categoricals and now are with LCFF, for us as a basic aid school district, they're still sweepable areas. And so we are held basically through the process of LCFF that they're going to keep us at that 12-13 limit. So whatever we received in 12-13, that's what we're going to continue to receive in the future. So it's kind of a no harm in that way. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to add back any of the dollars that they took away from us over the past five years as we were going through the budget times. But that's kind of something that we can hopefully begin to count on in the area of state categoricals. And then the local revenue is something that's tied into our rental properties, donation accounts. All of those types of things make up our local revenues. And so that's an area that we've really put a lot of work in. With our rental properties, Jeff Guy's done a masterful job with those to make sure that we are getting in as much revenue as we can through our local revenue sources. So that's a revenue snapshot at this point, $74,084,990 at that point in time. So if we go to the expenditure side, so as of right now in the budget, on August 26, 2013, we're at a total expenditures of $72,697,775. So we're actually at a place where we're bringing in more than we're spending at that point in time. Now, I will tell you, I hesitated to even bring this to you at this meeting because it's going to change when we run our September payroll. Because a lot of PARs go through, a lot of positions get set up in the month of August and September. And so all the payroll aspects of those, the personnel costs, are going to add to that expenditure side. So that number is going to go up before, when I bring this back to you next month. The key aspect that I would say for the board, and though it's, the 2 years of cuts, the $8.4 million, the personnel layoffs, all those types of things, I lived it with you. It was difficult to deal with. It was difficult to go through. But in the end, it's really put us in a healthy position in terms of our budget, and that's because of the personnel percentage, right? And so that was one of the things when school services came to talk to us last year, that standard of about 85% of your revenues as a base for your personnel costs is a very healthy place to be. And so that is something that, as a board,
as a cabinet, as a superintendent, we have to try to maintain that percentage as best as possible. So it'll fluctuate some, I would say, over time. We're going to add a bus route, you know, those types of things that'll happen that we'll need to do. But overall, it just needs to be something in our cognition as we talk about process, as we go through things, that we're just cautious of personnel. And the reason why is because, as we know, it's very difficult to go through the layoff process and upsetting. So if we did need to cut, it's a lot easier to stop purchasing one-time fund things, you know, materials and supplies, versus laying off employees. So we just want to maintain that balance as much as possible as we go through any process of reinstating anything, I would say, in the future. So the other aspects are part of the pie, and as you can see, that's a big part of the pie. Personnel costs are a huge, it's almost all of our budget, 85% goes straight to that. So we have our materials and supplies budgets with sites that have been cut over the past year with some of the process. We have our operating expenditures. We have our capital outlay and then other outgo. And so that's the basis of where we're at. And again, that's a snapshot on August 26th. It's going to change. And I would venture to say the expenditure side is going to go up because of the PARs and different things that get established, get put up. Now, the revenue part will also go up. So when it comes to more rental properties, more things like that we do, we will see increased revenue as well. The $170 per student Common Core funds are not part of the revenues yet. So, in fact, I just received an email today that they were going to be dispersed just today. So we hesitated to put that in until we actually receive the funds. So that's something for us to, you know, we have to come up with a plan in terms of how we're going to expend those funds and how that's going to tie in. So this is our snapshot at this point in terms of the budget. And I'm thinking that in terms of process, like Mr. Unger said, you know, we are going to have some money fall to the bottom line in terms of extra reserves.
I'm wondering more about that.
Thank you.
I believe we need an approval of the unaudited actuals, year-end financial statement.
I'll move approval of the unaudited year-end actuals for 2012-2013.
I'll second. So we have a motion by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Schaefer. I'm going to get it right before the end of the meeting. I will. You've been Schaefer. We'll get it right. Any discussion? So is this a general consent or a roll call vote? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? And no abstentions? Okay. Motion carries 6-0.
Okay, so I'm next on the docket for our Bellevue Santa Fe charter discussion. And so we have Ed Skilar here from Lozano Smith to answer questions for the boards. We also, Brian Goetz, principal of Bellevue Santa Fe, is here as well to answer any questions that the board has. Really, this item is before you. And I kind of want to give you a quick history, which happened in the past few months, and why we are looking at even a new MOU, the place where we're at this point. And so I believe the discussion, and Brian can help me if not, is that Mr. Miller, Russell Miller, who's my predecessor in the business department, had come to Brian and had talked to him about cuts, budget cuts. San Luis Coastal, we're cutting $8.4 million. So actually talked to Bellevue about possibly cutting our allocation to Bellevue as well, that the fair share of cuts should happen. So that was part of the discussion. There's another aspect, too, for our district, a concern about the liability issues in terms of special education students, and that is the school, Bellevue Santa Fe, takes students that and has taken students in the past outside of our boundary area. So though that is something that's in the agreement that they're not supposed to, and they have a whole process for taking San Luis Coastal Unified School District students far before anybody outside the district, at some point in time, and Brian can help with that if possible, but they did take students outside the district. So, and really, Ed can comment on the fact of whether they can even limit that legally as well. So that was from the district standpoint, Mr. Miller talking to Mr. Goetz about Bellevue Santa Fe, the charter school, and our charter school renewal was up. Now, from the charter school standpoint, Mr. Goetz, of course, feels like, listen, you give my school less funds than you give an average student in San Luis Coastal. So for them, it's really a budgetary issue of possibly becoming a state-funded charter school. So it's not an independent charter school. They're still under our control, our in some ways in terms of accountability, those types of things. But they would become a state, a direct-funded state charter school. And that would provide them some independence, possibly some ways in terms of budgetary-wise raising more money through the LCFF model. So that's the pendulum, I would say, that probably has started this conversation. Right?
I agree.
Okay. So getting together with Brian, with his attorney from his school, and Russell and Ed, dialogues began around the old MOU and how we can make this happen, how we can get this established. So part of that for Bellevue Santa Fe is possibly becoming their own LEA for special education services. So that actually is a year-long process that has to take place. And so, which they should be able to do, it shouldn't be a problem, because we've had other charter schools in the area that have been able to join the LEA, one, I should say. But it should be something that they should be able to establish and get accomplished during that time. And then that would thus relieve us of the liability issue in terms of students and so on. But that's basically what's kind of a part of this discussion, why we're where we're at today. And so Ed and Brian can come up, questions that the board has in terms of any of the items about charter schools, establishing state funded, any of those things. We're here to try to help and answer any questions, because really we want to make sure you're informed of the dialogue and discussions that are going on, because eventually this MOU will have to come before you for your approval at some point. And I'm going to open it up to questions.
Mrs. Roger.
Okay, this is only my first question.
Okay.
Would you, for the benefit of myself and some other board members who, none of us were around in...
I know 14 years of the history, so I can take you to that point. In 96, there was a proposal to close Bellevue Santa Fe Charter School. Actually, it was 95. As a district school, that's correct. Yeah, as a district school, and the parents and staff got together and wrote a charter and presented it to San Luis Coastal's board for approval, and it was approved for starting in the 96-97 school year. So that was we're what's called a conversion charter school. So we started out in 96-97 as a charter school, whereas the year before, we were a public school in San Luis Coastal. Since that time, we have renewed our charter with the district every 5 years. And you will remember this last year I came and the charter was approved. So it goes back, but the history of the school, Bellevue and Santa Fe, goes back to the late 1800s in the Avila Valley. It's a rich history. I won't go into that far into the history. But in terms of the conversion to a charter school, it began in 96-97. And so we've been operating as a public charter school in the state of California since that time. And started out, we are the 93rd charter school in the state of California. There were 100 authorized by the state of California. We're the 93rd. And so we're kind of proud of the fact that we have continued, and I think, as I presented to the board before, we are proud of the fact that we have worked closely with the school board, and we have really tried very hard to create a good relationship. When I first came to the school, I don't think it was necessarily a close symbiotic sort of working together relationship. There were some difficult times. Bellevue went through a series of changes in administration. We had four principals in two or three years, and it just wasn't a good close working relationship. So working with Steve Ladd, the superintendent at the time for the district, we decided that we should really have a transparent relationship, that we should see where we could work together, and my commitment was that I'm an educator. My job is to educate young people. And so when I begin my presentation about the history, I start talking about 146 young people, who is my responsibility, I see, to educate and make sure that when they come to Bellevue, they get the best education possible. We are also fiscally sound. We've never had any audits. We have had no exceptions in our audits. We're audited every year. And so the history is, you know, at the beginning, I think it was kind of difficult. I think there were some difficulties in terms of working together with San Luis Coastal and seeing that we had a common interest. But I think since when I came on board 14 years ago, I've enjoyed my relationship working with the district and really striving to create a school that you could be proud of as a board, saying, you know, you wouldn't have to be ashamed of what Bellevue represented. And we were a California Distinguished School in 2008, and we've worked really hard. I think the piece that we're working on here tonight is the idea of how do we maintain this relationship and make sure that budgetarily, you know, that our perspective is, let's see if we can work out a way that we can be funded in a way that every charter school in the state of California is funded in this direct funded model. Now, in the eyes of the state, we already are direct funded. If you look us up under the website, it will say direct funded, but we're just trying to put that agreement into effect here tonight. I'm not sure, Marilyn, I really kind of got off track there for you.
No, but that's okay, because it's all interesting to me. And I've asked quite a few questions of staff regarding this MOU and the changes.
And Ed can maybe talk about the actual, because the first agreement, I believe, back in 96 was actually something that was a document that I think that went to the courts. Was a
that's correct. There was a 1998 funding agreement, yeah, that did go to the courts and was went through what was known as a validation action. So that 1998 agreement basically summarized the funding agreement between the charter school and the school district. One thing I just wanted to add was that in regard to the big picture of how the law or what this relationship looks like between Bellevue Santa Fe as a school of the district, before it converted, it was a public school. It was a school of the district. It then became a charter school, a conversion charter school, as Mr. Goetz called it. It's still a public school, but it is now a school that's operated by a nonprofit corporation that's still receiving public funds, still public school. The district's role in that is to provide what's known as oversight. And so you supervise the school, but at an arm's length. What you're basically, you're not running the day-to-day operations. You're taking that whatever funding there is, passing it through, and there is a funding machination that was reached in the 98 agreement and then in the later 2005 agreement. That funding is past public funding.
Is it legal to ask for that kind of exclusivity for our students in our district only, or does it need to be open to other students? What legally, where are we with that?
What the law contemplates is that students from, if you are a resident of California or your parents are a resident of California, you're eligible to come to a charter school regardless of the district that it is in. However, what the law also contemplates is that if you are having, if you have full admission or you have a lottery process to get in, that you do give preference to district residents, the residents of the chartering district, to come into the school. So you're giving them preference. Everybody's allowed to come in. You're giving preference to the district residents.
Okay. And
the charter school law also says that we are, as a conversion charter school, we are required to give preference to students who were in the attendance area of the
in the attendance area of the school before it converted to a charter school.
The original.
So our policy is to give preference there as well.
Okay. Does anybody know the answer to the question? Students who may be attending Bellevue Santa Fe, who do not reside in the San Luis Coastal district, are you receiving ADA from the parent district for those students?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Just to clarify, he's funded through the state. He receives money for each one of those students, whether they're in district or out of district. And then the district makes an in lieu property tax contribution to the charter school for which if the student's coming from a basic aid, if the student's coming from another revenue limit district, the district is reimbursed 70% of that amount of the in the
of their revenue limit
of the okay. revenue limit transfer. And the if it comes from another basic aid district, I don't know if there are any students coming from other basic aid districts, then they're not reimbursed. Then you're not reimbursed by the state. So it's 70% from revenue limit district to come into your basic aid district for which your district is backfilled by the state for that in lieu property tax transfer made to his school.
Okay. Thank you.
Clear as
Mr. Buckman?
Thanks for that great summary. Some fun times back then up at AXA and getting a lot of phone calls from folks here in town. I have one real quick one. It's in item 13D. I'm very excited about the fact that No Child Left Behind is probably going to be a bill concept that's left behind. And what I'd like to recommend is since NCLB really was just the ESEA with a fancy name, that we might reword that section to say ESEA, the charter school will be responsible for ensuring the staff's compliant with provisions of the federal ESEA, so that that covers us for the future, because I just want NCLB to go away. The other question I have is I read this, and I really tried to get it, and I'm not sure I have it yet, so I just want to ask this question. As you become an LEA, and as we start, and you're a member of the SELPA, our district has been accepting students from other districts into our special education program. Is that our relationship changed then with Bellevue Santa Fe? In because right now we help immensely with the special ed program. So are you now considered another district? And will we be taking students from you under those terms?
So I'll try to answer it, then Brian can jump in too. But so basically, as their own LEA, they would be responsible for special education within their school, within the charter school. So Brian, I think for the most part, he's had a resource program at Bellevue Santa Fe, and you know that's been the speech and language services. So a few things that they would actually have to hire out, have somebody there, deal with IEP, you know, go through the whole process. So that would be up to them. Now, if they had a student that needed services that maybe Bellevue Santa Fe could not accommodate, then they would actually then pay San Luis Coastal to possibly have those students within our program. So that's, in some ways, that's a little bit, Chris can probably help me out on that as well. But
if I think can, that's. And so if I can just follow, one of the things that I think the Bellevue Santa Fe has been very good about, and this district has been very good about, is making sure that if a student with special needs wants to attend Bellevue Santa Fe, they have the opportunity. And so those students now that need those greater services, are they staying at Bellevue Santa Fe now, or are they coming to classes at San Luis Coastal?
Let me clarify your question just a bit.
Please.
So you're saying if a student comes to Bellevue,
right,
and they have service, they are needing services through their IEPs, that we do not have those services? Yes, it is. I've done it.
Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I think if I'll put on a special ed hat for just a minute if I can. I would suspect that once you become a member, once you become your own LEA in the eyes of the SELPA, you could purchase services from any regional program vendor. So it could be San Luis Coastal, it could be Lucia. In your case, probably Lucia Mar would be my guess, either or. But I did have a question. So what happens? So let's say you do accept a special education student who has some pretty significant needs, and you're able to accommodate them, or you accommodate them through, and let's say it's a Lucia Mar student. So you accept a Lucia Mar student who, I can give you an example. So let's say you accept a Lucia Mar student who's doing fine, doing well, has a terrible car accident, and has a traumatic brain injury. All of a sudden, you become the LEA for that student, and it's a Lucia Mar student. You will then, at that point, have to purchase essentially a vendorized service for special education of that student. When the student matriculates from sixth grade, where do they go to school? So if it's a Lucia Marr student who's attended Bellevue Santa Fe with a pretty significant IEP, they get to sixth grade, they're now matriculating to seventh grade, do they automatically matriculate to San Luis Coastal, or do they go back to their district of their original district of residence?
They go to the district of residence.
Their original district of residence.
Yes. So, okay. So a student exiting the charter school goes back to, is a student of the district of residence. They don't become a San Luis Coastal.
Okay, thank you.
Mrs. Sheffer?
And I was going to ask that exact same question, but with regular ed students. So any student who is accepted into Bellevue Santa Fe for K-6 after sixth grade returns to their home district.
That's correct. Just because a student attends a charter school doesn't change their residency requirements or what their district of residence is.
Okay.
That's already been happening.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you.
Yes, please. Hi, Mr. Getz.
Hi.
I've enjoyed my visits to your school. It's a very special place. I'm looking through here for a number. I was thinking there was a limit under the MOU. There was a limit to the number of students that could be admitted in any given year to Bellevue Santa Fe. Is it 150?
You just seem so close. It seems like I could just talk to you, but evidently my voice isn't projecting tonight well enough. So the limit, as it stands in the agreement that we have right now, is 146 students, in-district students. Now, that's been some subject of some discussion, as you've heard a little bit here now. So that's the number. If we went with the new MOU, then we would be able to add students as we needed to. And so it gives us some flexibility and some more autonomy in terms of increasing class sizes. But I should also point out, it is not our intent to, add many classrooms or add a lot of students. We're very happy with the program we are running right now.
And you're rather limited by facilities.
And
space,
we are limited by facilities. And so, there are limits that that are just naturally there, in terms of enrollment. But in answer to your question, the number is 146 that's there.
And what do you envision? What would be the ideal number for this school?
Less than that, even. I think that the closer you can come to smaller student-to-teacher ratios, the better. But I don't anticipate in terms of budgetarily. Philosophically, I would say, if we could go to 18 to 1. Right now, in kindergarten through third grade, we have 20 to 1 in terms of our class sizes. And then in the upper grades, 22 to 1. I would say our next step probably in terms of class size increases would be to go to 22 to level it out at 22 and then take a look at our budget and see kind of where all this falls out in terms of budgetary. But in terms of philosophically, we want to keep it as small as we can.
And would you consider K through 8 or are you sticking with
There's
K
been
six?
Some to sorry. You want to answer that one?
Well, I was going to pop in before. So actually in the MOU towards the end, there was something that talked about population growth and it was actually a topic of discussion with us. And so because we had set the bar, I believe, at like 10%, and then looking at the numbers, 10% was, it was not very many kids. So,
14.6.
So, again, for Brian's sake, he's entering into a land, I would say, with his board, with in terms of the budget, is, he may have to add one or two students to each grade level. To be able to make the budget work, to be directly funded, to go away from the model that they're currently at. So that's something I think we set it at 20%.
I think that's what we ended
up. So just to allow the school flexibility, should they need to add students, to be able to make their budget, to make sure that they were, in good standing, that they wanted to have that there, even though, the talk was not to grow. And you can address the 7-8.
If I can just clarify on that, on the 20% number.
My understanding is that, that Bellevue Santa Fe became a charter school was first of all, the enrollment was really low, but secondly, because of the site of the building on San Luis Creek, that your ability to grow physically was constrained. Is that true?
Yeah, we're in a floodplain, and it's about every 100 years or once or twice every 100 years that creek could flood. There's a berm that goes around the main part of the school that is supposed to divert the water around the school. So it is limited in terms of being in a floodplain and just making sure we do that in a way that would be safe for the students and safe for the buildings. So we are limited in that regard.
Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. So what we're talking about here is sort of a, if I'm getting it right, a win-win for the district and the charter school. The charter school seeks additional funding through the direct funding model. And certainly I know that you've had to engage in a tremendous amount of fundraising to, you know, to keep yourselves afloat and operating the way you want to be over the years. So additional funding for you, and by becoming your own LEA, lessening potential liability for San Luis Coastal for students who are not, who don't reside in our district. Is that pretty much the two main points?
Sums it up pretty well.
I think there's one other point that should be added to that.
Okay.
And that is that we would take on primary responsibility for maintenance of the building, you know, maintenance services, so custodial services, as well as for repairs and things like that. So that is the other component, is that we then take on those costs as well. So we really become primary steward. We have primary stewardship, if this MOU is approved, to maintain the buildings and keep them up.
If I remember correctly, in 05, perhaps, 05, 06, when the last MOU occurred, the district took on some additional responsibilities related to Bellevue Santa Fe, and part of it was accounting,
yes,
some accounting functions,
yes,
some grounds maintenance functions. There were several other things. In this new MOU, we continue to provide those services that we agreed to in 05 or 06.
So there's certain items that are economy of scale issues that they just can't physically do them being a charter school. So such as getting liability insurance,
having
payroll people, helping out with health insurance. So there are some items that we will still work with, mm-hmm, Mr. Getz, and kind of, you know, like for us, it's a lot cheaper to get copiers, to have a copier agreement, because we rent so many. So by them being a part of our copier, they're still going to pay us back for the copier expense, but they're just able to kind of piggyback on some of those bids, kind of like we do sometimes with Los Angeles when we buy things, computers and vans and things like that as well. So there is some of that sprinkled throughout the MOU that will hopefully assist them in maintaining those services.
So that all makes perfect sense. There's nothing about any question I've asked Mr. Getz that that should be interpreted as contentious in any way. I want you to be successful.
I haven't interpreted it that way.
Good.
Yeah,
I remember.
It really is part of my desire to continue this positive relationship we have, this transparency, you know, that working together with your board. I understand, and I'm very proud of our relationship with San Luis Coastal, and I hope you feel the same way.
I think we are too.
Good.
And when the first year you opened the SciTech Exploratorium,
yes,
and I love my neighborhood school where my children went to school, but that was a field trip that we took, and I thought, oh gosh, why can't my kids have something, you know, this wonderful? So there is much to be applauded at Bellevue Santa Fe.
We opened it up to within the district, and yeah, we're proud of that as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Buckman?
You know, just one thing comes to mind, and this may be an economy of scale issue, is I remember coaching soccer and wanting to use your fields, and we did that through the district. Does that also fall now in your lap, or are we going to continue to – this is a very minor detail. But
you're welcome to use our fields, if that's your question.
but
I think it's going to fall. It'll fall in their lap.
For them to schedule their own fields. I'll call you later.
From substitutes to
– this is the direction we're going to go.
Okay.
Are there any questions or comments from the public? Okay, seeing none. This is just for discussion, correct? And we will move on. Thank you very much. It was very informative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Okay, we are on item 9.03, approval of the instructional materials budget.
So here I go spending money already, my new position. But so no, actually, this is something that that's been a concern for years, to be quite honest. That's been brought up, I think, when the initiative process first started, in looking at arts, looking at ways that we can improve music throughout the district as well. One of the key things that came out of that is just in terms of both purchasing instruments as well as maintaining and cleaning instruments. It's been something that's come up. Fortunately, for our school district, we have an outstanding band program at both Los Osos and Los Osos Middle School as well as Morro Bay High School. We also have an outstanding band program at San Luis Coast or San Luis High School and Laguna Middle School. But with the addition of sixth grade to Loams and our STEAM aspect, and what we prided ourselves with was that arts was going to be part of that process. Extra period for Mr. Bellier to have a sixth grade band program for all sixth grade students to be able to attend, as well as increasing choir options for students at the school. So those were all put in. And what we found was the kids all signed up. I mean, his band is bursting at the seams at Los Osos Middle School. And so, you know, right now we have students in the band class without instruments. And so that's a problem. Just like you want to provide books, you want to provide things for students in classrooms. This begs the process question, like Mr. Unger brought up earlier, and just in terms of budget in general, and you know these things come forward. And so this is again something that I believe when we talk about budget in October that we need to discuss process. You know, we haven't had a furniture sinking fund in forever in the district. It's been a long time. We've stopped our computer sinking fund over the past few years. So those are issues that we need to look at, we need to address when we look at the budget, when we look and we move forward. So I just wanted to give you a copy of the request itself. So what I have before you is a list of instruments cost for you to see. So band instruments are not cheap. That said, they last a long time. And so this is a list that Mr. Bellier put together for me. You'll notice some of his comments, and I blacked out his cell phone number at the bottom when this came out. But so this is what he put forward that he needs for his Los Osos Middle School band students. To get the instruments in the kids' hands, to get it started, to get it moving in the right direction. I did, just so that you know, I did talk to the teacher at San Luis Obispo High School as well as Amy and Kim McGrath in terms of what her needs were. She felt like she was okay for this year. There were some drum heads that she needed. But overall, you know, the actually having instruments in kids' hands was really the Los Osos Middle School issue. And so depending, this was a preliminary cost estimate. Amy Shields has put forward $10,000 in art and music grant funds. Kyle Pruitt put forward $5,000 out of his sixth grade Loams Middle School budget to help out with the instrument purchase. So I believe that we can probably, as Brent even put in his notes, get these instruments at a discount, more of a discount price, although that does not include shipping in and taxes, so that'll need to be added. So I would say what I'd like, and again, the only reason why I'm bringing this to you now versus waiting a month and talking about it with all the other items is we have kids in class without instruments. So that's why it's more of a push now than anything. And so with that, I would, you know, if the board can approve up to a certain amount, and then, you know, if we can buy the instruments, it's probably not going to be the $120,000 because we've already put $15,000 towards it. We're probably going to be able to get a discounted price. But if the board can let me know whether it's $105,000, I mean, the goal would be for you to tell me $120,000, up to 120 would be great. That way we can, you know, make sure
we can address as many instrument needs as possible at this time.
That was a comment rather than a motion.
I would make that a motion.
Okay, we can do that. Is there a second? We can also discuss it after the motion's made, too. It depends. And amend it if necessary, if my recollection of parliamentary procedure is correct.
I'll go ahead and second that for the purposes of discussion, okay, as well as my support for it. But just a question to think about. I talked about process, and I know we'll bring that. We'll come back with that. It's a lot of money, but I'm glad to see the arts programs moving forward, and I think this is really exciting, and I think it's really exciting for kids. Something for us to consider is in 3 years when the sixth graders become eighth graders and move on to Morro Bay High School, assuming that they all go into band, and who knows what's going to happen there. There'll be competition for other things. Are we going to need to buy more equipment, and do we need to be thinking sort of a sinking band instrument fund, knowing that we'll have hopefully more students going over to Morro Bay High for that?
I think we do. I think, again, like I said, with furniture, with computers, with different things like that, I think those are items that we definitely need to look at, and what's our process. And not necessarily that you give one band teacher a certain amount of those, but that, you know, maybe there's an amount each year that goes towards musical instruments in the district, and then the band teachers get together, and maybe next year it's Mrs. Jeske's turn to buy instruments, and the following year, you know, you help out with Morro Bay or those types of things. So there's also tie-in, too, that we need to discuss, because I know the band boosters is very supportive of both sides and help out with things. So it's not just a district expense. So there's other things. But I do believe that we need to establish some type of system or process in place for things like this in the future.
Thank you. I just want to clarify. We have a motion and a second. The motion by Mrs. Sheffer with the limitation, I believe, of $120,000. Is that correct? And a second by Mr. Unger.
And with any potential purchasing savings, so
exactly,
that the surplus money would go to elementary music.
Yes. Okay.
We'll go to other band needs.
That's correct. We'll go to other band needs. That's what I understand. Is
within that the district?
Is that correct, Ms. Sheffer? Okay. We'll go to Mrs. Roger and then Mr. Buckman after that. Mrs. Roger.
Thank you. I'm not opposed to this, and I do agree with Mr. Unger and others that we have to have some kind of a sinking fund. I don't think we've ever acknowledged musical instruments as consumables, but with a longer shelf life. I didn't really think about the fact that instruments get old and really outlive their usefulness for our kids. So I do think we need to establish some method by which we do an annual percentage replacement, or something can be worked out so that we aren't hit with this, which is a big figure. It's a big figure in 1 year. But we want to honor our commitment to Los Osos Middle School and the sixth grade program. We said we would offer a viable and exciting band program for those students, and we need to make good on that promise. So if I'm understanding, we have $15,000 in committed funds, five from Dr. Pruitt from sixth grade monies, 10 from instructional services, and we have a total need of $120,936.
That was just for Los Osos Middle School. So there's also the drum heads.
Oh, those
on the resolution, as well,
okay,
as the guitar strings.
Schools? Okay, so we have a total need inclusive of the monies from instructional services and the sixth grade middle school program. We still need $120,936.
And again, we're going to try to get a discount on it, shipping and handling, how that ties in. I just didn't want to go forward with the bidding process, getting everything started until I had approval to move forward.
Okay, so since we've added, recently added back one bus driver, potentially two more bus drivers, now this, I too am getting a little worried. I want to make sure that we don't get out ahead of ourselves. I'm wondering if my fellow board members would be comfortable with a not-to-exceed figure of $129.36.
That's what the motion.
The motion is not to exceed
$120,000. $110,000 in many of the cuts that we made was close to those amounts, close to that amount. Particular was dear to me was the $220,000, I think, for the summer school program. Not sure that we've actually added the bus drivers back yet. That it's there's some we're looking still looking at some routes. My first question is going to be, where is this money coming from? So where in the budget did we find $110,000 or $120,000?
So just from the chart I showed you earlier, the 826.13, so our current revenues are $74 million. Our current expenditures are $72 million. So we're right now, we have $2 million that's still there, right?
Right.
In terms of extra funds than we projected in terms of when we set up our budget. We have our unaudited actual amount that fell to the bottom line, the $3.5 million, $3.445 million. And so it's based on those. This is a one-time, I mean, though we can set up a budget for the future, this is one of those one-time items that can come out of those funds. And it's easy to, you know, it's not easy, but in terms of from a personnel layoff standpoint, it's easier to stop that purchase in the future than it is to lay somebody off. So I would say I told you know, in terms of board priorities and summer school, those types of things, those are definitely things that I think we need to bring to the board next month when we have that better picture in terms of the personnel costs.
Thanks. Appreciate it. So fully dedicated to the arts program, and it's just the second question would be, as we move through the budget process, did this come up at the community or at the staff level at that time? Because I'm sort of vaguely trying to remember, and I can't remember that it showed up.
In terms of, well, it wasn't a cut, so it didn't come up in terms of a cut aspect.
But was it on the list?
Well, it wasn't. We didn't have any instrument fund, so there wasn't anything to cut in terms of that part of it. Was it a concern from Bryn Bellier and from the band teachers? And I mean, absolutely.
Okay.
It's been a concern since we started the initiatives. I think he's got a whole proposal that he laid out for.
Yeah,
Bryn, so just so you know, yeah. Yeah,
we've talked, and I understand it. But as the suggestions came to you for spending funding, did this come up towards?
So we didn't have, in the budget process, we didn't have things that we wanted to spend money on because we were going the other direction.
Okay.
And because we haven't, since I've been a superintendent, contributed to the music program, that's not to say the need wasn't there.
Right.
And that's been part of the frustration. And so we're in a unique situation, and I think we've played it so conservatively part of the conservative component in the decision facing the board last spring, if you recall, we had to make that decision regarding summer school early. And it was before the May revision, and we were still very unclear as to what the financial circumstances would look like with fair share. We were thinking back in March and potentially earlier, and even later, we were wondering whether the governor was going to take all of our categoricals. So we played it very conservatively as we needed to. And lo and behold, the May revision and then the corresponding budget adoption improved our expectations. And we know summer school is very important. It was hard for me to even make that recommendation, especially now given the fact that we have money falling to the bottom line.
You remember that 85% personnel cost, and so I'm going to. That's that huge point for us. That though those reductions were tough, and we're at the place that we're at,
we would be, if those were still at the 91%, we would have lots of issues in terms of future. But
We've sort of gone from one-time funding and places where we cut that were one-time funds and, and were smaller cuts to the bigger personnel issue, and that's not my concern. My concern really goes to what I think Chris has brought up, which is we're hearing about bus drivers, we're hearing about band instruments, and I really have to support the concept that we, as a board or as a community or I think staff, needs to come with sort of a plan or some kind of strategy that we can use as a board rather than it coming one at a time and not, you know, not really being...
I completely...
That's really the point I'm just trying to
make
here. And if STEAM is STEAM, STEM is STEM, and we got the A in there, and I fully support this.
And again, because the only reason why this is kind of pushed, kind of like the bus driver situation, is because it's almost an emergency status right now that we have to work on it now. But I totally agree, and so that's, I think,
$20,000 for musical instruments for coastal schools, drum heads for San Luis High School, and three-string guitars for the elementary music. Any unused funds from the purchase go to the elementary schools for other band needs.
And was it just band needs or elementary band needs?
Band needs, not elementary.
Okay. Mrs. Sheffer?
I support the previously made motion, but I also want to say that, you know, I of course support coming up with a process that but we will always, or unfortunately, I would assume that from time to time have matters that seek a level, that attain a level of urgency that need to be dealt with separate and apart from the development of a full-blown process. And I think that the bus issue became that. And in our best, the board, staff, all of our best efforts to predict the needs, I see this as kind of a happy expenditure that we didn't realize the number of students who wanted to participate in and benefit from our music programs, and this is just one of those things that, in order to provide those opportunities to kids coming into Los Osos Middle School, that this is a great, as far as I see it, a wonderful chance to support their the A in STEAM. So, again, I just wanted to add that to the comments about the motion.
Any further comments? Okay. We have a motion for approval of the instructional materials budget. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And any abstentions? The motion passes 5-0. Thank you. I'm going to assert a prerogative here. I think we need a 5-minute break. And we will break now. It's, I believe... 7:45, and we'll come back at about 7:51. Board is back in a session here, and we are at item 10, the action consent agenda. So as we go through there, as you look through your agenda, is there any of these you wish to have pulled?
I'd like to have 10.06 pulled.
Okay. Mrs. Sheffer?
I'll make a motion to approve items 10.01 through 10.05.
And I'll second.
Okay, the motion was made by Mrs. Sheffer and seconded by Mrs. Roger to approve items 10.01 through 10.05. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes 5-0. Okay, so Mr. Unger.
I ask for 10.06 to be pulled because I believe that Mr. Buckman is going to need to I'm being a little presumptuous here, but I believe Mr. Buckman is going to need to abstain from this one, so I thought I'd go ahead and pull it. And then I'll go ahead and make the motion for approval of 10.06.
I'll second it. So the motion to approve 10.06 is moved by Mr. Unger and seconded by Mr. Questenberry. All in favor, indicate by saying aye or yes. Anybody opposed? And the motion passes 4-0 with one abstention.
I don't know this, what
I was the second.
Is. I've got nothing here. That's 10.03.
Yeah, it says 10.03, but
oh,
it's
I
after
see.
10.05, so I'm assuming it's 10.06. It depends on what copy of the agenda you got.
Okay. I have no quarrel with that.
Did you want to revote on that or?
No, consider me an affirmative vote.
Affirmative vote, okay. Vote in the affirmative. So pass it 4-0 opposed and one abstention. Just clarifying that. So we're now, so that would be a discussion item perhaps on at the next board meeting?
If you so chose to allow that to happen.
I would support that also.
Okay.
And I think we get general that. Support from everyone here.
Okay.
So.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so I think we're... Any other items for the future agenda, board agendas? Okay, seeing none, then we will move to the board member reports. Mrs. Sheffer, and then we'll go to Mr. Unger, and then Mr. Buckman.
It's been fun to attend back-to-school nights. Always lovely to see our schools back in session, and... I've appreciated the opportunity to do that last week to go to Los Osos Middle School, C.L. Smith, and Laguna Middle School. I can never resist an opportunity to go to C.L. Smith. It was fun to see the changes there, visit the classrooms, and watch everyone off to a good start. And I would just like to also thank Mr. O'Connor for the guest pass to San Luis Obispo High School, and the fact that it is not simply an athletic pass, which we have received in the past, but it is to any event at the high school. So for a person like me, to whom the drama department is near and dear to my heart, I will now be happily attending even more shows at the theater than I have in the past. So my thanks to Mr. O'Connor and San Luis High for expanding our entry into events on campus.
Mr. Unger?
Great, and I was able to meet Mr. Robinette at Los Osos Middle School on the first day, and it was pretty darn exciting. They had got to sit in on an assembly for the 7th and 8th graders and welcoming them back at a full house in the multi-purpose room, and then Mr. Robinette and I went in and visited the sixth grade classes, and it was great. They are all in their places with bright, shiny faces. It was really nice. And then I was able to go to Del Mar and visit Del Mar on their first day, and I think it's really important to acknowledge the hard work that our school secretaries do every single year trying to get kids enrolled in school ready to go. The secretaries at Del Mar related to me that they were working sometimes till 9 o'clock at night trying to get it done, and they put forth this valiant effort, and I really do think that we need to recognize the work that they do. Every single school secretary. So I want to thank them.
I concur, Mr. Unger. Having been a teacher and knowing how much that they do on a daily basis, it's quite fantastic. Mr. Buckman.
Hi, Mr. Quisenberry. I'm extremely excited. I got an opportunity to talk to some of the staff around the district, and we have been evidently putting in place some recycling programs, and I think they're being accepted pretty well, and what these mean, students will be heavily involved in their own recycling in their classrooms, so they're going to be involved in it. It's probably pretty good STEAM material. It also means that the schools will be having recycling everywhere, but it also means that we may be able to stop using some of those very expensive garbage bins that the garbage company comes and picks up, and going to just more recycling, which means we'll be saving money. And so I'm very, very happy that staff's put that in place.
Thank you, Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Roger?
Thank you. I can't just sit quiet and look like I've been a slaggard, so I have been out and about. I was at Los Osos Middle School with Mrs. Sheffer for back-to-school night. I also attended back-to-school night at Hawthorne, which was wonderful. Very excited. They've got a terrific neighborhood school at Hawthorne. I went to Pacific Beach High School and touched base with the new administrator there. They're excited about their program and some potential changes that they are in their infancy, but they're just kind of formulating new ideas that could be put in place there. And they have their WASC accreditation, I think, this year. So they've got their work cut out for them, but I think that there's a good high energy level there. As I said, I went to Baywood School and observed the new preschool. I was also able to our neediest kids. And that's the end of my report.
Thank you, Mrs. Roger. I have one just kind of announcement rather than a report. This Sunday, September the 8th, is Grandparents' Day. And we have a celebration sponsored by the Baywood School Elementary PTA and Los Osos Rotary Club. We'll be offering some fun activities from 11 till 3. There'll be music, games, and various activities for young and old, and some competition. And so I invite everybody to come. And also, it's at Baywood School. It benefits Baywood students and the Rotary Eradicate Polio program. And there will be a Zumba portion, I believe, starting from 3:30 to 4:30 in the Baywood Multipurpose Room. So we believe we have something for everyone. And any more announcements? Then I believe we are adjourned.